We're talking this morning with 6th District Congressman Sam Graves, a Republican from Tarkio. And Sam, it's been a while since we've had you on the program here, but it seems like it's been a busy few months in Washington, D.C.
It has. Obviously been a very busy few months, just trying to get the new government in place and everything moving forward, and just lots of work to do.
Let's just talk about some of the things that's been in the news in the last couple of days, in particular a special counsel being appointed in Robert Mueller to look into possible coordination in the Trump administration with Russian officials and possible obstruction of justice. How do you view what's taken place here in the last 2 to 3 days?
Well, obviously Mueller getting involved is going to, I think it's going to be a good thing, get this thing out of the way as soon as possible, and so we can move on getting the business done. So that's obviously important, and it's probably a good step in the right direction anyway.
Have you heard any type of timeline on how long this investigation could take?
I haven't at this point. It's hard to tell. Obviously, there's a lot of work that goes into an investigation. I think now there's a total of 5 investigations going on all together, between the House, the Senate, Justice Department, the independent counsel. It's just, a lot of work, and I know how long these things take, but hopefully it'll be over with sooner rather than later.
Just overall, there's been meddling into the election process with the Russians, but with the Trump administration in particular, what's the take that you have on that right now?
I don't think there's any collusion between the Trump administration and the Russians, but what we do know is that many countries, we've known it for a while, many countries tried to interfere and hack our computers, China being one of the most pervasive and one of the worst when it comes to hacking into the systems here in Washington. I know the House of Representatives deals with it every single day. But you've got the North Koreans, the Chinese, the Russians, obviously a lot of organizations trying to influence, our elections. Of course, the United States does the same thing in other elections. So it's obviously a frustrating process, and it would be nice if we could get that, cleaned up and stopped.
What steps can be taken to try to eliminate that?
Well, the hardest part is anytime you have a hacking, and I know one of the things we deal with here in the House, and you think about all the different computer systems that we have in the federal government. You've got, each agency has a system. The House has its system. The Senate has its system. The White House has its system. And I know, just speaking on the House of Representatives, we get hacked or attempted hacked into our system multiple times every single day. In fact, there's been days where we've had hundreds of attempts to tap in. The Chinese, the North Koreans, all over Europe. It's just multiple attempts. Sometimes it works, a few times, and most of the time it doesn't. But it's just trying to stay ahead of that, trying to outthink the people that are doing the hacking, and trying to outthink the people that are trying to access information. And I know at various times, we've even been told, you watch what you keep on your personal system, because each one of the offices has its own system as well. And, there's attempts to hack into those systems, depending on, who the individual is or what their position is in Congress. So it's an ongoing process to try to, outthink the people that are doing the attacking.
With the special counsel being appointed, will this be something that will be in the realms of Mueller as well to look into the overall hacking issue that apparently took place in the past election cycle?
Yeah, it's hard to tell at this point, how far into that he's going to be. We constantly, we deal with it every day specifically speaking to the House of Representatives with our security team and trying to ascertain who it is that's actually doing the hacking. Sometimes we can figure that out, sometimes we can't. But, there's it can be investigated. I don't know what more they're going to turn up. I think he's going to specifically target, look at the areas in terms of election tampering or trying to influence or get information so they can put that out in the media. He's probably going to look into that specifically. So,
as far as the Trump administration up to this point, again, it's been a couple, 3 months that he has been president. How would you assess the way things have gone up to this particular point?
Oh, he's gotten a lot done. And, in fact, if you look at what the president's gotten done, look at what the House of Representatives has gotten done. The Senate, obviously, is taking longer with them because they've got all the appointments that they're trying to get through. They've gotten through the cabinet-level appointments, and now they're drilling down into the second and third tier. Obviously, they're meeting with roadblocks at every turn. from the minority. But the House has gotten a lot of work done. The President's gotten a tremendous amount done. If nothing else, just all of the executive orders and regulatory laws that we have rolled back through the Congressional Reform Act in the House and through the President through executive orders, we've gotten a tremendous amount done there to clear the way for agriculture, farms, businesses to continue to move forward and create jobs. And then just looking at the legislative priorities that we've done, you know, repealing the Health Care Act, moving right on into tax reform, which we're doing right now, and then we'll be moving directly into the infrastructure package, which I'm going to have a huge part in, and that'll be coming up later this year.
You talk about the health care bill. One of the criticisms that came out about that was that they felt like the current bill that was approved by the House was rushed through, and some of the congressmen had been quoted as saying they didn't have a chance to fully read that bill. Did you have a chance to go through that before the vote took place?
Yes, I had a chance, and we'd had you know, most of the principles in front of us long before. So for somebody to complain about not having enough time to go through it is a little bit ridiculous. You know, if we go back to look when the thing was passed originally and Pelosi rolled it out that evening and we voted on it in the middle of the night, you know, which was you know, rushed. That was when everything was rushed through so bad, and that's the reason we had such a poor bill. But this one has a lot of good components in it. It does a lot of things, fixes a lot of things, and repeals most of the bad things, and it's something that you know, needs to get done, and we need to get it through the House or through the Senate.
What are some of the things that you feel that are positive coming out of this bill?
Well, the biggest thing is just you know, eliminating the overall bill period, because the fact of the matter is we're seeing massive increases in premiums. In fact, we've got millions of people that have lost health care coverage just simply because they can't afford the premiums anymore. This year alone, Missouri is going to see a 28% increase in personal premiums, and we just can't afford that. And, you know, the price of this thing continues to go up. If folks remember when it was originally passed, it was supposed to be a $900 billion bill, and that thing's crossing through $2 trillion and still climbing. It's absolutely unsustainable, and we have to, you know, just to keep the country you know, solvent, we're going to have to do something. One of the good things about it, though, is it maintains the pre-existing condition and issue. We don't want anybody to ever be able to be denied coverage because of a pre-existing condition, and that's something that's, you know, a benchmark part of this particular bill that we passed to replace the Obamacare, and then we get it back into the private sector where it belongs, get the government out of making the decisions on who your doctor can be and what treatments and everything else. We get the government out of it to try to bring those costs back down and get these companies competing against each other for that business. And the biggest thing, too, is being able to cross state lines to form, you know, health plans, associated health plans, like organizations. You know, that's a huge part of it, which is going to help bring premiums down. And then the fact that you've got individuals that are now going to be able to deduct those health care costs, same as businesses do. That's something that's going to help a lot of families and a lot of individuals considerably, and something that should have been done a long time ago.
Now, some critics of the bill have said that when it comes to pre-existing conditions, that that people with pre-existing conditions may not be able to get health care with this bill. How does, in your mind, does this, allow people pre-existing conditions to maintain insurance?
Well, it just simply says that. People cannot be denied health care coverage if they have a pre-existing condition. And so when you have people out there saying that, that pre-existing conditions are not going to be covered, it's nothing but scare tactics on their part. That's all it is. And it's unfortunate because what they're doing is distorting the facts and, you know, trying to put out information that is just simply not true and you know, moving forward on that. So it's unfortunate, but the fact of the matter is it leaves the pre-existing condition component in there and makes sure that people cannot be denied.
Democrats have also said that it's a tax cut for the rich. How do you answer that criticism there?
Well, that's ridiculous. The fact of the matter is, too, this thing was bankrupting the nation and continuing to climb in terms of cost. And you had taxes that were being levied on everybody out there. And there is tax cuts. In fact, what it is removing the taxes that were put into place as a result of Obamacare. It isn't necessarily just a straight-up tax cut. It's just removing those taxes that were put into place. And that's middle income, that's high income. It's everybody that's paying into this thing, which is completely unsustainable. So, one of the things that the left likes to do is just target, and, that same old mantra, tax cuts for the rich, tax cuts for the rich. To some people, the rich is anybody that's got more money in their pocket than you do. And, that can be anybody. And so, I reject that. It's a ridiculous argument. The fact of the matter is that Obamacare is bankrupting this country, and we have to do something to turn it around. It's just literally skyrocketing. The cost of health care, the cost of premiums to individuals. We've seen millions of people lose their health care just because of the increased cost of those premiums. They just simply can't afford health care anymore. And so you got a lot of individuals out there on the left that want to continue to see that happen and continue to see those health care costs skyrocket. And I think their ultimate goal is to have a single-payer system where the government runs everything. Well, the government can't run the programs that they have right now, let alone doing everything. And I don't want the government making decisions for me on what treatments I want or what doctor I can see or who I can see or how I can see them. I want to be able to make those decisions on my own, and I want my family to be able to make those decisions on their own.
As you mentioned, this is currently over on the Senate side now. What are you hearing on the Senate side about this bill?
Well, the Senate's bill will obviously look very different. The Senate will do their thing, and then we'll come together in conference, and the bill will probably look even more different than both versions individually. So we've still got a long ways to go. We're in step, 4 of a 10-step process. So we've still got a long ways to go in this and a lot of work to make the bill be even better. Usually that's the way it always works. By the time you get something through the other chamber and then you come together in conference, it's a much better bill than the way it started out. And so I'm looking forward to that process.
Now, you talked a little bit earlier about infrastructure, and that's been one of President Trump's goals, is improving infrastructure in the country. What is taking place with those discussions right now?
Right now, we're waiting on the administration's detailed proposal. They're probably, Elaine Chao testified for the Senate Commerce Committee yesterday that they're going to be coming up with their details probably later this month. Then the House will start picking it up immediately and moving forward. It's going to be a massive infrastructure bill, which will include all modes of transportation, highways, bridges, aviation, inland waterways, pipelines, rail. So a little bit of everything to try to improve and update the infrastructure we have here in this country. We're going to pay for it through P3s, which are public-private partnerships, and through repatriation that will come about within the tax bill and those dollars coming back into the country. But we've got a lot of work. The House will probably be working on our version. I'm going to guess in the September-October timeframe once we get the president's proposal later this month, and we'll probably see it on the House floor. We'll be working on it between now and then, but we'll probably see that version, I guess, on the House floor between September and October.
Agriculture, obviously a very important issue in our region, and Sonny Perdue, the new agriculture director, how do you see the direction of the agriculture department going right now?
Well, I hope they're going to be in a positive direction. We've got another farm bill, obviously, to pass, which will be coming up here in another year. Farm policy is consumer food policy. We have the safest and most abundant, most affordable food supply in the world. We want to make sure it stays that way. And we want a robust crop insurance program. That's all the help that farmers need, is just to make sure we have a good crop insurance program. The farmers can have skin in the game, be a part of that process, the risk management, and being able to move forward and make sure that we have that safe and abundant food supply that we've always enjoyed. So Farm Bill is always a big part of that. The unfortunate part is this, the actual agriculture portion is a very small part of it. Most of it is the nutrition programs that we see and utilize throughout the country. That's the biggest portion of the Farm Bill, but regardless, it's still about consumer food policy.
I don't know, in talking with you in the past on one issue that you've been strong on is less regulations from the EPA, and it appears that's something that President Trump has campaigned on as well. Let's talk a little bit about the EPA and what's taking place with that organization.
We've already pushed back on some of the later rules that the EPA came out with, Waters of the U.S., for instance, and some of the things that they were being far too overreaching on when it comes to maintaining or the use of private waters. We're also pushing back on some of the erosion regulations that they got into, and the president is doing everything he can to remove a lot of those, as well as the House, and we've cut the funding for the EPA considerably. The fact of the matter is, and in fact, we cut the EPA back to 10-year ago funding levels. So the bottom line is the EPA was out of control. They were far overreaching on what they were doing and hampering agriculture, hampering small business, and we need to get control of them again. So that's exactly what the process is that's taking place right now, and we're trying to reverse some of those things that were just simply out of touch with the reality.
Why do you see the role of the EPA and the benefits that it can have?
Well, the EPA obviously has, a role in protecting, protecting air quality and water quality, but they also have to be a little bit reasonable. There becomes a law of diminishing returns at certain points, and what it does is it prevents that job creation. It prevents businesses from moving forward and farmers and agriculture from moving forward. That's not to say that we want to see, polluters and that sort of thing. But you take energy, for instance. We have technology today. We can burn coal in a very clean and efficient way. It's a very cheap source of energy. And I don't like, turning on my light switch and having my electric bill so high that it's just simply unmanageable. It hurts families. It hurts low-income families in a big way. And we can use that coal to create electricity in a very cheap and environmentally friendly way. But if the EPA had their way, they would completely eliminate coal as a fuel source. If the EPA were smart, they would be concentrating on trying to help other nations figure out how to do it in a clean and efficient way like we do here in the United States. So just cutting off an energy source, the cheapest energy source we have in this country, because we are the Saudi Arabia of coal, we should be using it, and we should be using it in a very environmentally friendly way. But the EPA, again, they would have us completely eliminate that as a fuel source.
Do you see a role for alternative sources as well? I know Atchison County and several areas in northwest Missouri have the wind farms and some other forms of alternative fuel. Do you see that still being something that will be vital?
It is, to a lesser extent, though. The problem with wind energy is it's horribly inefficient. You cannot store it, and the cost of it is so expensive. We subsidize, as taxpayers, we subsidize wind energy at a higher cost of the entire cost of that same unit of electricity and coal, for instance. And, that means that it can't sustain itself. It can't stand on its own. So, I think it's a little bit of everything, whereas you've got, solar, wind, coal, nuclear. For heaven's sakes, nuclear should be a part of our energy policy, and it's still not to this point. But our energy policy should include everything and not just taking away certain aspects like coal, because it is so cheap. But wind has its problems. It's a part of the solution, but it's not the answer to the solution.
And we might turn our attention here before I let you go on education with the recommendations coming out of D.C. right now. What do you see as the federal government's role in public education at this time?
Well, as little as possible, to be quite honest with you. The federal government's number one job, we're charged with in the Constitution, is national defense, as opposed to what a state's number one job is, and that's education of our children. The more we can turn back to the states and give the authority to the states and to the local school boards, the better off we are going to be. So as very little federal involvement as possible is the direction I would go. Right now we have schools get very little of their funding, and it's less than 20%. Sometimes it's usually in the neighborhood a lot of times 7, 8, 9, maybe 14% of their funding comes from the federal government, but yet the majority of their regulation comes from the federal government. That's just wrong. We need to give the states and local school boards more latitude than we are right now. And, you know, that's a principle I've always stood on and would like to see it go even more in that direction.
And finally, a lot of your colleagues have had some town hall meetings during some breaks in the session. Will you be planning on any town hall meetings coming up soon?
Well, we do town halls all the time. It hasn't seemed to have satisfied some of those folks out there that want theater. They don't want a town hall. They want theater, which I choose not to participate in that. So if they want it, some of those groups want to go out and have their little show, that's their business. But I'm going to keep doing what I have always done, and that is visiting businesses and farms and organizations, and we have our town halls at those, and people are welcome to come. And for that matter, what's interesting is we've offered meetings and one-on-one contact with all of those individuals, the 12 or 14 that seem to show up at different events and want to protest. But they don't want an individual meeting. They want theater. And so, I choose not to participate in that.
All right. Well, Sam, we appreciate your time. It's definitely an interesting time in Washington, D.C.
Yes,
right now.
Yes, it is.
All right. Well, Sam, again, thanks a lot for being with us.
Yes, absolutely, John. Talk to you later.
Okay, that's 6th District Congressman Sam Graves. I'm John Coffey, and that's your Morning Conversation.